Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing WatsonX Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with WatsonX Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Take a pause from your to-do list with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
This summer, click into cordless power with Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot. Tackle more than half an acre of grass with the convenience and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt battery-powered mower. And keep your flower beds looking fresh with the 40-volt cordless string trimmer. Then clear leaves and debris with the 40-volt leaf blower. No cords, no gas, no hassle. Click into Memorial Day savings happening now at the Home Depot and on homedepot.com. How doers get more done.
The Large Neutron Collider podcast is a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Large Neutron Collider, the podcast that's all about the geeky things happening in the world around us and how very excited we are about them. I'm Ariel Kasten, and with me, as always, is longtime favorite, never out of style, never out of... This is not working, but he does, Jonathan Strickland.
Wow. That's possibly the second greatest introduction I have ever received. Thank you, Ariel. And in return, I have a question for you.
Oh, yay! A question!
So, Ariel, as always, I start this episode with a question. I did not think this one up ahead of time because I just realized that, wait, that's something I'm supposed to do. So here's your off-the-cuff question. If you could inhabit any classic television series, like you are living in the world of that TV series, and I'm talking about a series from, say, the late 80s or earlier, which one would you pick?
I'm going to go with the easy answer and, you know, not a lot of thought put into this, but probably I Love Lucy because I got red hair and she's got red hair and she's a goofball and I'm a goofball. So it just seems like an easy transition and fit. What about you?
Well, if I'm going to live in any nostalgic television series, it's going to be WKRP in Cincinnati because I've already got the job skills to talk on the microphone and be a DJ. And it'd be an easy transition plus... some pretty awesome tunes in that era. And, as long as Dr. Johnny Fever's got the night shift. So today we've got our roundup of news in the geek sphere. And we start off with something that is equally absurd and I guess not so much shocking as it is like, well, of course they did. So what is that, Ariel?
All right, so KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken, has come out with a gaming console, and I thought at first that this was a huge old joke, especially after they came out with their Colonel Sanders love short film early this Christmas season.
Yeah, Recipe for Seduction.
Yes, with Mario Lopez playing the Colonel. But I should have known, because KFC really likes to shoot for the fences. Is that how that phrase goes?
Shoot for the moon, aim for the fences, something like that.
Something like that. Anyhow, you know, with the KFC Double Down, they like to experiment and have fun. And this time they're having fun with a game console. So it is a gaming device that also has a chamber to keep your KFC chicken warm, which I will say is a good thing, because KFC chicken, once it gets cold and you have to reheat it, is not fantastic. But
it's better,
also
better to just eat it cold.
Ugh, no. Ooh, ah, the cold, fresh cold fried and hot chicken. And crispy, or not KFC. when they're hot and they're fresh, they're good. After that, I'm picky about reheating my chicken, so it's a thing. But also, fried chicken is not really a great gaming snack, because it gets your fingers all oily, and then you're touching whatever controls that you're using. And so, you know, it's interesting. It says that it's cross-platform, so I don't know what that means.
So I'm pretty sure that we would just call this a, like, a gaming PC. Like, this
That's what I thought.
This is just a gaming rig. It's not like it's an Xbox or a PlayStation, which arguably those are also, at this point, more or less just very specialized gaming computers. Mm-hmm. And a couple of things on that I would think of is that, one, it does sound like it's a pretty powerful machine based on the specs that have been released. Two, we don't know if or when this thing will ever be available for purchase. It may very well be that there is one, it exists, but it'll never become a commercial product. That's a possibility. Or two, when it does become available, if it does, we don't know how much it's going to cost. And three, my main thought was that this, like you were saying, fried chicken and video games, not a great combination, not just because it gets your fingers all greasy, but if you've ever had to clean out like an oven or anything where you've been cooking greasy food, it leaves that film over everything. And I would imagine, like, even though I know the airflow for this device is to pull air away from the electronic components up through the chamber where the chicken is and then out through the top, I would be worried about that buildup of oily residue affecting the electronics below and drastically reducing the useful life of that particular piece of hardware. I say that as the host of a tech podcast. It just doesn't sound like a good idea to me. Moving on, our next story is that we heard recently that some of James Doohan's remains, that is the actor who played the original Scotty on Star Trek, the original series, some of them have ended up aboard the International Space Station and have actually been up there for more than a decade now. And this story goes along with the fact that he wanted to have his remains shot into space, you know, sort of a nod to him as his role in a very popular science fiction franchise. And one part of his remains, his cremated remains, were in a rocket that failed to reach orbit. So that one did not quite make it into space. Another was pushed out the airlock of a spacecraft, but that meant it just eventually deorbited and burned up on reentry. The third, though, appears to have been smuggled aboard the International Space Station by Richard Garriott, who is also known as Lord British, the creator of the Ultima series of computer games, who in 2008 was one of a very small number of private citizens who ever got a chance to visit the International Space Station. He paid about $30 million to do it.
Oof.
And as a favor to one of James Doohan's relatives, he brought with him a plaque that had James Doohan on it and a little bit of his remains, and then hid it below the floorboards of part of the International Space Station. So since 2008, Scotty's remains, or part of it, have been aboard the International Space Station. Don't know if it's going to stay up there now, but that was something I read today.
I mean, yeah, I'm not too mad by it. Like, I'm fine with it.
A weird thing nonetheless. And we thought we would open the show with a couple of weird notes, but the rest are some pretty straightforward things. And it starts to kind of tie into some of the other stuff we'll talk about in this episode. One is that we now know what Warner Brothers' strategy is going to be moving forward after 2021. We already reported about how the company is going to release all of its 2021 movies simultaneously to theaters and to the HBO Max streaming service. But that's not what's going to happen after that, right?
No, well, maybe for 2022, we don't know. But in 2023, they're planning on releasing their movies in theaters once again. I know that in a previous episode, we worried that theaters might be going by the wayside. And I say worried because Jonathan and I both like a movie theater experience sometimes. But it seems like the studios, whether it's due to production companies saying, no, please don't just release us on streaming, or whether they are really banking on the movie theater industry rebuilding, are planning on still using movie theaters. And I'm happy about it.
I'm happy about it too. And as we've kind of alluded to in previous episodes, this might be, this probably is a necessity if we expect to get the same kind of films that we've become used to over the last couple of decades, because without those box office returns, you don't have the financial incentive to produce blockbuster movies, not at the budgets that we've been seeing. So without the movie theaters, movies are not going to be the same. So I think this is more good than bad, but it does mean that they're counting on movie theaters having a major comeback.
I mean, that being said, you know, Wonder Woman 84 released this Christmas, and despite not having a big box office opening, they are already in plans to make a third one.
Yep, it's already been greenlit. The film pulled in $16.7 million upon its debut, which, again, if you look at recent blockbuster releases from like 2019 or earlier, that would be considered a colossal failure most years. But in a year where many theaters are shut down, like there are entire theater chains that are shut down, and a lot of people are quarantining at home, $16.7 million is nothing to sneeze at. So we know that Patty Jenkins has been signed to direct the third film, so just as she did the first two. And both of us have seen Wonder Woman 84 at this point.
We have, yes.
Ariel, do you want to give like a non-spoilery reaction to what you felt about the movie?
Sure. The opening was, this is going to be super vague. The opening was better than I expected. I had seen like a little, they released the opening clip from Wonder Woman on YouTube prior to the movie releasing. And it was okay, but when I watched the clip in its entirety, as opposed to what had just been released on YouTube, I got very excited. I think all of the characters really committed to the roles they were playing. And of course, you know, going in as a bit of a comic superhero, supervillain nerd, I knew who all the characters were, and I knew some of their history outside of this movie. And so I was able to connect with that for people who, like some of my family who have seen the movie, who weren't really familiar with who Barbara Minerva was or Maxwell Lord, you know, the reveals for them kind of came too late in the movie for them. Like it didn't quite have the pacing for growth that someone coming in fresh would need. And for me, it just felt like there were some really fantastic moments and there was some really great character work. But plot wise, I felt like they jumped, especially in the last third of the movie, from point A to point C without a lot of interconnecting tissue between the points. And so for me personally, I enjoyed it. But if I think about it too hard, it falls a little flat.
Yep. Same here. I felt the movie was bloated. It's 2.5 hours long. So I felt that the movie was too long. And yet I also felt like there was a lot of connective tissue, as you say, that's missing. Like there is a lot of jumping, you know, like we have to put this scene in because this thing has to happen, but we don't have the time to connect it to the previous scene. And even as someone who's familiar with comic books and someone who was really paying attention during this movie, I was confused by the progression because I kept feeling like we were missing out on a connected scene. Mm-hmm. And that was really frustrating for me. There was also some questions I had that never get answered in that movie. One big one that I'm not going to ask because it's an integral part, but maybe after we record, I'll ask you, Ariel, what you thought. I found it largely unsatisfying. I thought, as you say, the performances were fine. I thought the tone was also very strange. Like the tone went all over the place from very lighthearted and almost Home Alone-esque with the opening heist sequence to really dark and disturbing stuff. So it was very, it seemed like a very inconsistent film to me. That being said, I also thought that the first Wonder Woman film was a billion times better, apart from the fact that their third act in the first Wonder Woman movie also kind of goes off the rails. But my hope is that Wonder Woman 3 will be more like the first film and less like the second film. It also makes me worried a little bit about Rogue Squadron, another movie that Patty Jenkins is directing. Although, again, we should also remember that writing and directing are two different things.
Yes. And you know, it's been this weird balance in the Justice League between Snyder's vision for the DCEU and what the writer's visions are for each individual movie, and some of the audience saying, we don't want something quite this dark. So it's been a weird balancing act they've been trying to figure out. You know, I'm still enjoying it enough that I'm happy to let them continue to try as long as they're willing. Because I have enjoyed, you know, I liked Aquaman enough. I enjoyed the character. Again, the character work in Justice League was really good, even though the story was ho-hum for me. You know, I liked the first Wonder Woman, things like that. But that being said, kind of to tie the last story in with this one, I read right before we started recording that even though they're releasing movies to movie theaters in 2023, they are also planning on releasing at least two DC movies a year to HBO Max with smaller, more risky characters like Batgirl or Static Shock or things like that. So we'll see what happens. I'm kind of glad that HBO Max is rolling in the DC television, and they might do television series too, all of the DC streaming network stuff, because that gives me a chance to watch it and give it a chance. So.
Very similar to Disney Plus and the Marvel world. Well, we've got a lot to talk about with some nostalgic pieces, some nostalgic news items, as well as a larger discussion. But before we get to that, we're going to take a quick break.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade. With the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Okay, so we're going to start talking about retro and nostalgic pieces. We've got a couple of other news items that fall in with this. One of those being the Cobra Kai series, which originally released on YouTube Premium. It was a YouTube Premium exclusive. Now it is a Netflix original, starting with season 3. And we learned that they're going to actually release season 3 1 week earlier than had previously been reported.
Yeah, January 1st. So happy New Year's, everyone. You know, Cobra Kai is one of those ones where I have a lot of fond nostalgia for the Karate Kid. It took me a little bit to get into the series, but I think they're doing a really good job with it. And I think, you know, seeing Zabka go in all the times from all, like having little cameos in all these other shows, it does make me go, huh, I wonder how Johnny would have turned out. And so I've been really enjoying the series for that.
Yeah. And it's fun that it's building on that internet meme of who was the real villain in Karate Kid.
Yeah. Another, man, it's just like this week, looking at all of the geek news, it's all been nostalgia. Another one of those was news about the Barbie, vague news about the Barbie movie that is in theory coming out sometime in the future that they've been trying to make for feels a few years now.
Yeah. Originally there were talks of a live action Barbie movie. I mean, at least as early as 2015, if not sooner, or earlier rather, not sooner, but those projects never really came to fruition. But currently there's a project that's helmed by Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach, who have written lots of movies together and separately and directed movies separately, who are working on this. And Margot Robbie is the actress who is attached to this. And we don't know much except to that Robbie said that the movie is both faithful to the intellectual property and yet is not what you think it is, which seems like that's an impossible combo.
Yeah. And honestly, of all these things of, you know, we'll get into this once we get past the last couple of news items, of all the things that are nostalgic. And I'm like, I really don't want them to mess with the original story. Barbie is one that I don't particularly care if they, I mean, the whole point of Barbie is to imagine new things. So
I personally thought that the way Barbie was imagined in the Toy Story movies worked really, really well. Like it was a fun imagining of that character. A live action one, I've definitely like, I don't even know what to expect. I mean, for one thing, the toy has a lot of baggage attached to it when it comes to things like building up unrealistic body image expectations and that sort of thing. I mean, there is a long, long history of criticism directed toward the toy for that reason. So it does make me curious how they will, or if they will even address that at all, overtly or in subtext in the movie. I don't know. I just don't.
Yeah. I guess we'll see if this one actually launches and takes off and gets through production. You know, we also got another trailer for WandaVision that's coming up this week. And that, you know, that show is also banking a lot on nostalgia and with Leave It to Beaver and Brady Bunch. You know, it goes through all of these old sitcoms as Wanda's trying to imagine a perfect world to live in with Vision. So
at least that's what we assume is going on. It's really hard to tell because we don't know if the world she inhabits, which is clearly a sitcom inspired world, like the Brady Bunch and the Partridge Family and the Leave It to Beaver and all those kind of shows, maybe even a little bit of I Love Lucy in there too. All of these things are clearly part of it, but we don't know if this is Wanda's own creation as she's falling into madness, which would be kind of similar to a storyline that actually played out in the comics, or if she's been trapped there by some other entity. I've seen one guy who's really, really swinging hard for it being Mephisto who's behind everything. We just don't know. But yes, that nostalgia element is definitely a big part of that trailer. And then finally, we have a trailer. This was actually the one that kind of got us into thinking about this episode in the first place, because Ariel saw the trailer and then sent it my way for me to look at. And it's a film called Max Cloud, which I had no awareness of until Ariel sent me the link.
It looks like a lower budget movie, but it has some I would say pretty middling to high names attached to it. It's got the woman from the new James Bond movie, who's also in Captain Marvel, and someone from Westworld, and someone from Legends of Tomorrow. It's got all of these successful actors in it, but it looks kind of like a B-level movie. And it's, we're talking about nostalgia, and everything we've mentioned so far is banking off of a property that previously existed. And this movie is banking off of people's love for 80s video gaming and yeah, that sort of feel of movie. So it almost feels kind of like a Tron movie or The Last Starfighter, where a girl gets sucked into a video game and becomes one of the characters, or like Jumanji, and hilarity ensues. Her friend finds the game, and she's got to convince her friend that she, the character in this old 80s game, is her, and that she's sucked in the game, and they have to fight bad guys, and
she has to find some way to get back out of the game.
It's
funny, because if you watch the trailer, it's a combination of so many things. I said in our notes that it's a combination of like Wreck-It Ralph and Toy Story and Jumanji, but it's also, I would think, kind of a throwback to movies like Big, where a character makes a wish, the wish comes true somehow, and then the character realizes that the consequences of that wish were not what they expected, and they have to find some way to reverse it. So it's like a combination of all those things, and it is very much tagged into the nostalgia of a genre of video games from the 80s. So not a specific title, but more like the general way that smash 'em up, fight 'em up, side-scrolling video games worked, stuff like Double Dragon, that kind of stuff, back in the 80s. And but it's very much trading heavily on nostalgia.
But for me, like, I have interest in seeing it not because I think it's going to be phenomenal cinema, but because, unlike Cobra Kai, which I do enjoy, or Coming to America 2, which I'm sure I will enjoy, it's something new built off of the love of something old. So I guess the question for you, Jonathan, is so much of our media now is focusing on these things that we loved in the past. And I know there's always that internet thing going around of there are no new stories, just old stories that people are rehashing. I'd say Stranger Things is a new story, even though it focuses on the 80s, or
sure, yeah,
Things like that. Do you like stuff that banks heavily on the nostalgia, or would you prefer something that's new, that's set in the future or nowadays, or something like that?
I don't have any problem with something that taps into nostalgia if it's doing so from a genuine place, and that the setting is an integral component to the storytelling. To me, like, that's what makes it work. And this is not anything new. We notice it because now we're seeing the media reflect the stuff that was popular when Ariel and I were kids, right? Mm-hmm. But this happens all the time. Like, when I was a kid, one of the big movies that was really popular was Grease, which in turn was a nostalgic piece about being a teenager in the 1950s. In the 90s and early 2000s, you look at things like That 70s Show, and again, you're looking back at something that happened 20 to 30 years previously. So this is a cycle we see all the time, where the media of the day is reflecting the childhood loves of the people who are watching it. So you look at the age of the average viewer, subtract 20 to 30 years, and that's the stuff that you're going to see in the media. And this happens a lot. And if it is done well, I like it. And there are certain ones that really play with the nostalgic criteria, and they do it well. There's a movie called Turbo Kid that is this crazy schlocky science fiction action movie, exceedingly violent, but in a very kind of tongue-in-cheek cartoonish way. Mm-hmm. But it comes across as like you watch it and you're like, I could totally see this having been made in the 1980s, except the sensibility of it is a little too advanced for the 1980s. And the effects are actually a little too advanced for the 1980s. But other than that, it feels like it could have been lifted from that era of really weird, over-the-top science fiction films. Stuff like Big Trouble in Little China or Buckaroo Banzai. And so when it does that, when it feels like it's a genuine story, to me it's no different than if you were doing a period piece that was set in, like, you know, medieval Spain or something. It's the period and the setting of the story you want to tell. It's when you just are trying to cash in on that and your story doesn't have much story to it and you're just relying on that nostalgia to carry you through, that's when it falls flat for me. What about you?
I feel the same way. You know, I was raised on so much sci-fi that I kind of like looking to the future, but I don't mind if it's got a hint of the past in there. Mm-hmm. You know, for instance, the not new now, but newer Star Trek movies where they went back to the old James Kirk, you know, were they the most mind-blowing cinema ever? No, but it was new stories with old characters I love that still look to the future. And that was kind of fun. For the most part, they did just straight up Wrath of Khan in the second one. But
yeah. Well, except that they also made Spock a raving lunatic in the second one. He was this angry punching action hero, which is about as non-Spock as you get.
But, you know, I do like, you know, some movies that are made just for the one quick laugh, something I don't have to think about very much. That's why I like watching bad movies, you know, so Kung Fury, which I actually haven't watched, is an example of that, where I'm like, I would watch this. It would be funny because I haven't had what nostalgia they throw in there ruined for me, but it would probably be like a one-time watch.
And then there are other examples like Stranger Things is set in the 1980s and is also clearly a love letter to some of the most influential filmmakers of the 80s. Like Steven Spielberg's influence on the filmmakers or the series makers for Stranger Things is incredibly obvious if you watch that show.
There are nods to Alien in season 2.
Yeah. There are nods to The Thing, John Carpenter's The Thing as well. So plus all the Lovecraftian imagery, there's all the D&D imagery. There's a ton of influences, but again, it feels genuine within that story. When the film version of It came out, they made a decision to shift the timeline of it. Now, when it came out as a novel, it came out in 1986. So the 1986 novel of it, the childhoods were taking place in the 50s, not in the 80s, because you go back 30 years, or I think it's 27 years, something like that. I forget now how many years the Pennywise goes into hibernation and comes back out. But anyway, the childhood was set at a different time period, because the current events were set in 1986. When the movie comes out, they just shift everything up so that the adults are modern day, childhood is 1980s. And again, that was a way to connect to the audience of today, because if you set it where modern day was the 1980s and the childhood was 1950s, you would no longer connect with the majority of your audience. So that was a very calculated decision.
And I think, you know, with it and with Stranger Things, more with Stranger Things than with it, when you put in that nostalgia, like, albeit, you know, they're both set in the 80s, which, you know, is my childhood time. But when you put in the little things like the alien or the thing or blob or whatever, you know, all these little nods, and they're subtle and you have to pick up on them and you have to work for it, it's much more rewarding.
We have a mashup that we need to present. But first, I think we're going to chill for a second and take a quick break.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect.
Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
You came up with a mashup to create the ultimate nostalgic experience. Can you explain?
Yes. So Jonathan and I are going, what are we gonna mash up? You know, we could mash up Emmanuel. We've already done that. You guys haven't heard it yet. It'll come out in the future. But you know, what can we do that doesn't already exist? Because the more you rehash old properties, the more they get blended together. So we took something that was just truly nostalgia, Back to the Future. Is it because, you know, we're nostalgic about it now?
Yes.
And then we took something that is nostalgic about Back to the Future, but modern, Stranger Things. And yes, we said, what would this be like? Would this even work? I guess we'll find out.
So do you want me to go first or do you want to go first?
I guess I will go first because I'm pretty sure yours is going to be better than mine.
Stop saying that. Every single time you go first, I'm like, oh, that's such a good idea. All right. I want to hear yours.
I just like your idea so much. I'm just supporting you. Okay. So
Mutual Appreciation Society.
Yes. Upside Down to the Future. Marty McFly and Doc Brown are at it again. After a tweak to their DeLorean, where they add tachyon particles to improve its time-jumping capability, they are off to 31 years in the future. Once again, you know, Back to the Future 2, they went 30 years in the future to make sure they didn't mess it up with their time-traveling antics. They just can't leave well enough alone. But the tachyon particles, in conjunction with the flux capacitor, open a dimensional rift, and they end up in what looks like a weird jumble between Indiana and Georgia. As they exit the car, they realize they are still in the 80s. A darker, more bleak version of the 80s. What has happened? They must be in an alternate universe. As they scour the city, this Indiana-Georgia hybrid city looking for parts to fix their DeLorean so they can return to their timeline instead of their time, they come across a bunch of kids looking for their friend Will. When they see Doc and Marty, they stop looking and start to freak out, pointing and screaming, running towards Doc and Marty, seemingly knowing who they are. Doc and Marty, not wanting to upset the timeline further, run into the woods. And that's when they see it. No, not Pennywise, the Demogorgon. And it sees them. As the Demogorgon double takes, it starts slowly towards Marty and Doc. As it gets close to Doc and Marty, its mouth head thingy starts to slowly open. In a last-ditch effort of self-defense, Doc throws a right hook straight into the ribs of the Demogorgon, and they hear a familiar ouch. All of a sudden, the monster's mouth opens and a beefy blonde head pops out. It's Biff Tannen. Then they see the cameras all around them. Biff says, "What the heck are you two doing here on set?" He explains that they are in 2016, on a TV set, their DeLorean isn't broken, and they are in fact movie stars in the future. Not having ever expected that they would be famous, they decide, huh, well, let's hurry back to 1985, and they stick around for a while. What havoc will this wreak? We'll find out in the sequel, Back to the Present, Twin Pining for Home.
Okay. First of all, my hat is off to you. The fact that you reference that Stranger Things is shot in Georgia, but set in Indiana, in your meta fiction is perfect. And once again, Ariel, somehow we have taken exact opposite approaches to our pitches without sharing them. So now is my chance to share with you Back to Stranger Things. It's 1985, and Marty McFly is helping old Doc Brown with an experiment. Why is Marty friends with Doc Brown? That in itself is one of life's great mysteries, but perhaps it's so that Marty can occasionally access Doc Brown's insanely overpowered amplifiers. Anyway, Marty ends up ducking into a time machine made out of a DeLorean to escape some terrorists who come after Doc Brown for the theft of plutonium. Marty goes back to the past to 1955. So pretty much at this point, everything is playing out like the original Back to the Future film, except this time, in the past, Marty encounters a young, ambitious scientist in his late 20s named Martin Brenner. Marty and Martin, bonding over sharing the same name, because we know in movie universes, that's the closest bond you can have.
Of course.
They work together with Doc Brown to solve the time-traveling issue. But all the while, we see Brenner viewing the proceedings with a calculated eye, something that Doc Brown finds concerning but necessary in order to get Marty back home to 1985. Eventually, with the help of Doc Brown and Martin Brenner, Marty is able to return to 1985, only things have changed. His father is not, as it turns out, a popular science fiction novelist, but rather an important scientist. And he doesn't live in California anymore. When Marty returns to 1985 and he sees that Doc has survived the terrorist attack, he is told by his old friend that his father and mother left California for Indiana after his dad accepted a position in a lab. His dad's boss? Martin Brenner. And so Marty and Doc travel to Indiana to find out what's going on. They go to Hawkins, Indiana, a town where weird stuff has been happening for a couple of years, and they learn that George McFly is Brenner's successor, Brenner having been consumed by the Demogorgon 2 years earlier. George is obsessed with tracking down a young teenager referred to as Eleven, even as the barriers of reality are breaking down in Hawkins. They also learn that Marty is named after the deceased Brenner, and Marty is horrified to hear that his namesake has been up to these terrible things. Marty tries to reconcile what is happening. He is heading back to his little motel room in Hawkins when he encounters a group of kids. Mike Wheeler, Dustin Henderson, Lucas Sinclair, Will Byers, and the aforementioned Eleven. They're investigating why rats keep exploding. From there, we are pulled into a complicated story about how scientists, using technology adapted from Doc Brown's time travel devices, have opened up a portal to other dimensions that now threaten the safety of everyone in Hawkins and beyond. And Marty is faced with a new challenge, to go back in time again and prevent Martin Brenner from being part of his solution without being spotted by his past self in the process. Oh, and it's super hard to do because now magnets don't work, and that messes with the time circuits in the DeLorean. So at the end of the movie, Doc Brown, Marty, and science teacher Scott Clark, played by my friend Randy Havens, figure out how to send Marty back to 1955 again, setting up the inevitable sequel, The End.
Oh, I love it. And if that is not the actual next season of Stranger Things, Stranger Things season 4, I'm going to be sorely disappointed.
I mean, like, it's, to me, it's fascinating that we both went in different directions. Like, you went with the parallel universe approach, and I went with Back to the Future 2 taught us about alternate futures because of altering the past. And I thought, well, if we just throw Martin Brenner, who is, by the way, the bad guy in season 1 of Stranger Things, he's the scientist who's going after Eleven. If we just transport him, and he would have been about 29, I guessed, like I did some calculations, he would have been in his late 20s in 1955, then that makes it all work out for the storyline of Stranger Things and Back to the Future. So that's why I went with it.
I really like it. You know, I feel like this was the exact right amount of original story and nostalgia for me.
But we are curious what you guys think. If you have your own ideas of what a mashup between Back to the Future and Stranger Things would look like, or if you have any suggestions for future mashups or just things that you would like us to cover, you know, important topics in the geekosphere. So you should reach out to us. How do they do that, Ariel?
Well, they can send us a DM or a message on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. On Twitter, we're LNC_podcast, and on Instagram and Facebook, we're just Large Nerdron Collider. And, you know, if you like us, make sure to tell your friends about us, get them to listen, and leave us a review.
Yes, it really goes a long way to helping the show get noticed, and we want to reach as many geeks as possible so we can share the love. And until next time, I have been Jonathan Strickland.
And I have been Ariel Kasten, unless my doppelganger is changing the future right now. Dun, dun, dun.
Marty!
The Large Nerdron Collider is a production of iHeartRadio and was created by Ariel Kasten.
Jonathan Strickland is the executive producer. This episode was produced by Tari Harrison and edited by Max Williams.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200,000 for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
This summer, click into cordless power with Memorial Day Savings at the Home Depot. Tackle more than half an acre of grass with the convenience and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt battery-powered mower. And keep your flower beds looking fresh with the 40-volt cordless string trimmer. Then clear leaves and debris with the 40-volt leaf blower. No cords, no gas, no hassle. Click into Memorial Day Savings happening now at the Home Depot and on HomeDepot.com. How doers get more done.